I guess we can quickly recap the past three Giants games, the past month in Giants football. As I mentioned, I was driving back from Rhode Island when the Giants were playing the Cowboys. And I really hope it wasn't America's Game of the Week. If so, get your money back. And the Giants got absolutely steamrolled, 49-17. Was never, I guess there was maybe one point in the game where I was like, oh, we got an opportunity. I think it was like a pick in Dallas territory, the first interception. And we went for it on fourth and didn't get it. So, yeah, it sucked. 61 net passing yards for the day. Dallas had like 7,000 total yards. We were 0 for 12 on third down. Dallas had 37 minutes of possession. And so I was like, all right, well, I guess it's official. Like, we can probably put the seal on getting the number one or number two pick in the draft. And like all these goddamn youngins on the tweets on the X saying like Caleb Williams or Drake May are going to be right. Little do they know, Jaden Daniels is the man. So, and then we go out, Tommy DeVito, his first start is against Dallas. He does not look great, though he does throw two touchdowns. And so somehow that set a record or broke a record. It was like a never before done thing. And then he comes back in Washington. You know, I was down in South Carolina, so I couldn't watch it. So I listened to it and he puts up a hell of a show. Crazy that we won this game 31-19. A lot of people are acting like the Giants were in control of this game the whole entire 60 minutes. And I say to them, whoa, what game are you watching? Because it definitely felt like there were some points where it was in jeopardy. Washington had 28 first downs. and they sacked Tommy DeVito nine times. Washington did lose three fumbles and three interceptions, one for a return for Isaiah Simmons for pick six turnovers. And they had 34 minutes of possession. So, I mean, there are a lot of wins that are happening right now that have never been done before in NFL history, courtesy of the New York Football Giants. So at least they are. It's a season to forget in a lot of ways, but you're going to see this season pop up in a lot of record books down the pike, and you're going to be like, what the fuck happened in 2023? That was a crazy win, and of course we got the Paisan celebration with the hand gesture. You probably know the emoji with the hand gesture. So we got that touchdown celebration going wild, and everyone had Tommy DeVito fever, and I think we still have Tommy DeVito fever. And we're now starting to think, like, you got Saquon Barkley's endorsement. It seems like Saquon Barkley likes him a lot. And so what went from here's an undrafted free agent that is probably not going to be on the team next year to now we got people talking about should he start over Tyrod Taylor because Tommy DeVito is obviously going to be back next year and Tyrod won't because he's too expensive. It's like, whoa, okay. Every week is just a goddamn journey in the NFL. It's just like every week is a new. It's just like a different world, different rules week to week. And then Giants hosted the Patriots. I had briefly entertained going to this game with my buddy who's a Patriots fan. I put it out there back when it looked like things might be turning for the Giants and the Patriots weren't so like completely out of it and defunct. And then once the Giants, like Daniel Jones goes down and they get slaughtered by the Cowboys and the Patriots put up some real stinkers, my buddy was like, we're not doing this, right? And I was like, yeah. And Giants pull out the win, 10-7. It's just like a very ugly game. Like yet again, the Giants gave up 18 first downs. They gave up six sacks and 34 minutes of time possession to the opponent and won. And it's because they forced turnovers. Three picks, two from Mac Jones, I believe, one from Bailey Zappe. We were outgained total yardage, and third down conversions were about the same. New England was 2 for 2 on fourth down conversions. But Tommy DeVito taking care of the ball, not throwing interceptions, not fumbling the ball, either taking sacks or taking risks, you know, throwing it deep, Jalin Hyatt a couple times. Jalin Hyatt is such a goddamn weapon and is being wasted. So it's good to see that he's coming around, that he's probably going to be a big part of the offense moving forward. I would hope he would be a big part, but you know, I mean, New England had a 34-yard field goal attempt to tie the game at the end of the game and hooked it wide left. And I immediately texted my buddy and I was like, now that is how you tank. Like, they kept it interesting. They kept it close. They had a chance to tie it or to win. And they, they blew it accidentally. It's like, who's to say that Bill Belichick wouldn't whisper in his ear, hey, hook this and you get an extra blah, blah, blah in your stocking for Christmas. So another win. So now we're 4-8. And so we go into bye week. We're feeling good. And there's even some talk about, you know, we're technically, mathematically, we're not eliminated from the playoffs in the postseason. And technically, if we could run the table and win out, or win the next 4 of 5 games, we would be 8-9 and looking at possibly getting the 7 seed. Like, the Seahawks are kind of meh, right? They lost to the Niners on Thanksgiving, and then I think they lost again this past week. So they've been kind of in a spiral. The Rams have kind of taken off, and of course the Packers have not taken off. The Packers are our next opponent. So, you know, NFC South is just a cesspool. Probably the weakest division in football. And so it's like NFC South winner gets the 4 seed. Doesn't look like anyone else from that division is going to compete. We're now a half a game above Washington now, and we're in 3rd. I mean, Washington, Jesus Christ, I don't know what the hell is going on with that organization. But, like, they did not have a complete sell-off. I mean, they traded 2 of their best defensive linemen, but I don't think that was a complete fire sale. And yet their defense just looks atrocious. They got smoked by Dallas on Thanksgiving. And they got smoked again by Miami this past weekend. So it would seem, I mean, Jack Del Rio is fired, and it looks like Ron Rivera is probably the next to go, but they probably will let him finish out the season, I guess. So somehow we're in 3rd. And the postseason is not completely out of reach. It's like, you know, honestly, if Darren Waller comes back, if Dexter Lawrence comes back, if Evan Neal comes back healthy, even it, not that that matters, if Andrew Thomas wasn't hurt, you know, if Tyrod Taylor, you know, it's like maybe I would give us a chance just because the season has been so crazy with injuries and the quarterbacks going down. You know, I think they said like 4 of the 7 AFC playoff teams as of right now, their backups are playing, or backups of backups. It's like, you know, it's basically Tua, Patrick Mahomes, and Lamar Jackson are the only starting quarterbacks amongst the current playoff teams. If the playoffs were to start today, of course, like, Bills are just on the outskirts. Broncos are just on the fringe, but like, Kenny Pickett went down. Joe Burrow went down. Trevor Lawrence just went down on Monday night. It does not look good for him. So it's just like that kind of season where who's to say that like Dak Prescott or Jalen Hurts doesn't go down or blah, blah, blah. So it's just that kind of season. Now the big question is, should we start Tyrod Taylor or Tommy DeVito? And a lot of people saying that Tommy DeVito should start, and it's like he's earned it and he's going to be with this team next year, so he should get the experience. Like, we're out of it. We're basically out of it. And I'm thinking to myself, I feel like you should just play Tyrod. I feel like you should just play him because you still have a fighter's chance. You still have a little, like, 1% chance of making the postseason. So it's like, play him and start him until you're absolutely eliminated. And then maybe you can throw Tommy back in the mix. So, not that Dable would do that, but he should. The other big stories is like Dable and Wink aren't getting along, that no one likes Dable, how quickly the, the tables can turn, and that he's going to get rid of his entire staff, bringing a whole new staff. And people are like, no, we need to keep Kafka and Wink. And I'm like, well, I think we should keep Wink. I don't know, I'm not so sure about Kafka. But then again, it's like, you know, our roster has been so decimated this season, and it's so bereft of talent that like we haven't been able to really fully realize his playbook, mostly because the quarterback either doesn't have time to make the decision or makes the wrong decision. So, yeah, it's ugly. It's ugly. And so what bothers me is like everyone had that same response. Like the only thing that Dable and Wink fight over is the last slice of pizza. It's like maybe the PR, like Pat Hanlon, the PR guy, should have been like, hey, mix it up a little bit. Don't everyone use the line I gave you. So that makes me think, yeah, there's for sure a fucking problem between Dable and Wink. And that maybe the staff, I think it was the staff or the players, don't like how he takes them to task and like bitches them out and in front of other people, which I can understand. Yeah, that could get on your nerves a little bit. So that's where the Giants stand. But it's good to see like Bobby Okereke has like broken ribs and a broken toe and broken this and broken that. And he's like still playing he's doing some all pro type stuff. For sure, Pro Bowler has to be, but like in consideration for all pro, the turnaround that he's had from the first quarter of the season through the rest of the season has been tremendous. It's one of the best free agent signings. And I like, let's just hope he can, like, it's cool that he's playing through all this stuff, but like also, I also don't want to, it's also kind of like, it's the lost season. Like, don't get like hurt to the point where you can't play next season. But ultimately a good signing. Kayvon continues to dominate. So I think all the talk about him having a sophomore slump that, you know, again, got off to a slow start, but then caught on fire. So it's good to see that he's back on track, and can't say the same for Aziz Ojulari. It feels like this is probably the end of his reign. Or no, does he have one more year? I think it was a 2021 pick, right? 2022, 23. So I think he has one more season, but it certainly feels like you can't count on him unless he comes out and has a monster year next year, which is not out of the realm of possibility. It feels like they're going to go with another pass rusher, and they should go with another pass rusher in the draft and possibly free agency. But yeah, the defense has come on. This is one of the weirdest defenses because you look at like I'm looking at the graphic as they're doing during the opening series, you know, the Patriots opening offensive drive when they have like the defensive, they introduce the defense and they show like their rankings. And I'm like, I cannot believe we're in the bottom quarter of the league in a lot of categories and metrics. It's like it's nuts how hit or miss they are. It really is like we're either going to give up 40 points and 700 yards, or we're going to give up like around 200 yards and like 10 points. There's just no in between. It's like we're going to hold the Bills in check, you know, a powerful, potent offense that can put up a lot of points. We're going to hold them in check to under 20 points, under 15 points, two scores. You know, we're going to hold the Jets to two scores. We're going to hold. Not that the Jets are like a powerhouse on offense, but that you can hold all these offenses, and a lot of them aren't great, but like, and I know scoring is down across the league, but at the same time, it's like, dude, this is some pretty cool shit. And then you have games like the game against Miami and Dallas, both games against Dallas, where it's just like, I mean, we just have no shot. We're just getting crushed. I mean, it looks too easy. You know, listening to that game, it was like Bob Hopp and Carl Banks, I've never heard them like that. They're just like, yeah, this is ugly. Never seen anything like it. Just a complete lack of effort and awareness, and like have some pride. So Monday night game against the Packers at MetLife Stadium. Packers are favored by 6.5. Over-under is 37. The way that the Packers have looked of recent against the Chiefs, against the Lions. I mean, the Chiefs and Lions are two of the top teams in the league. Beat them both. Lions on Thanksgiving, Chiefs most recently on Sunday Night Football. Jordan Love has just completely turned it around. Like, he looked like garbage the first quarter, half of the season. And now he's, I mean, people are saying, okay, yeah, this makes sense. He's like the Aaron Rodgers to Brett Favre. He's going to be like their next franchise quarterback for the next 15 years and then get traded to the Jets. You know, he has almost 3,000 yards already passing. Already. It's week 14, Neil. There's like 5 weeks left. That's what a quarterback should have. Unlike our quarterbacks. Jaden Reed is their top receiver, which is nuts because I don't even know he was on the team. 40 catches, 513 yards, 5 touchdowns. A.J. Dillon is their top running back. I know that Aaron Jones has been banged up. I don't know if A.J. Dillon also had an injury because I think they had a I don't want to say a no-name guy, but a guy I've never really seen a lot of taking a lot of handoffs. So their defense has been coming to play, and Jordan Love has elevated his game. And that's basically the secret to their success, the recipe for dubs for Green Bay. So it feels like they are now, it feels like the Rams and the Packers have the most momentum and are probably going to secure the last two spots in the playoffs in the postseason for the NFC, which sucks because it's like, you think about it, if we had just pulled out the wins against Buffalo and New York, Buffalo against the Bills and the Jets. If we win that Bills game, we win the Jets game, we're 6-6. And we're not necessarily in the driver's seat, but we have a lot more control over our fate and our destiny. And now it's like, probably not. And if we do, even if we do go on a run, if we lose even one game, we could miss the playoffs. It's like, eh. So, you know, we get Tyrod back. Should be a little bit of a boost. Maybe not as many sacks. Don't lose as much field position. You know, maybe make a play or two. But be nice to get Darren Waller back. But yeah. So is it going to be a game where we give up 40 and get smoked on our home field yet again in primetime yet again? Or is it going to be a game where it's like we hold them to two scores and we get a touchdown, a field goal, and lose 14-10 or 14-13? I don't know. But the fact that Daniel Jones is still our leading passer with 900 yards is incredible. Slayton's our leading receiver. And I just saw, I think he's on the injured list. Maybe he's like, he's been pretty banged up of late. And then Saquon almost has 700 yards rushing, which is incredible. He literally, I don't want to say he's exactly like Barry Sanders, but that was like, I can't tell you how many games I watched Barry Sanders start off with like 10 carries, 15 yards. And then he ends up with 15 carries for 105 yards. It's just like he rips off one or two long runs. And then he's back in business. Like, you can shut him down for a half, three quarters, but he's going to come out in that second half or the fourth quarter, and he's just going to put up numbers. It's crazy. Of course, that can't happen in a blowout, so we have to keep it close, and that's where the passing game, the defense has to come into play. And so far, it's been the defense forcing turnovers and DeVito not turning the ball over. The last five matchups, last year, we upset the Aaron Rodgers-led Green Bay Packers in London Town, 27-22, when Daniel Jones had like backups of practice squad players playing and put together drives without Saquon. And that's when we knew we had something special. December 2019, we got smoked in the snow, 31-13. On our home turf, January 2017, that was the wild card game after the boat fiasco, losing 38-13. October 2016, that same season, in the regular season, we lost 23-16 at Green Bay. And then in November 2013, we won over the Packers because they were starting Scott Tolkien, DDS. So, I'd like to sit here and think that regardless of who we start at quarterback, that our defense comes to ball out. But the fact that we probably won't have Dexter Lawrence back, the fact that Andrew Thomas is playing on like a sprain, something torn MCL, and is like yet still outperforming guys that are fully healthy is like bananas. And the fact that we're missing Waller, it's just there's a lot working against us and not much working for us. So maybe the defense does. I mean, that's the thing though, is like we're getting gashed on the ground with Lawrence out and we don't have Leo. So literally it's our top two defensive linemen are gone now and you have to depend on Ashawn and Nacho. And it's like, not so great. So I would think that Green Bay would run it and run it and run it and run it and run it. I mean, I've said that about every opponent so far. It's like, just run the ball. But the defense can step up, put on a show. Maybe we'll have a chance. But I think this is the, I mean, New England has one of the better defenses. I mean, it's in bananas that they've let up, what was the graphic? 14 points or less in their last four games in their own four. You know, and the other teams on the graphic are all like 3-1, 4-0. Like they're the only team to not win a game. And normally if you put up those numbers on defense, like you win all those games, you should win all those games. So that defense is tough. You know, I mean, even the Chargers, who are, I would say, pretty high flying offense, they usually put up a lot of points, put up 6 points against them. So do I think New England's defense is better than Green Bay? Yes. So I think we should get at least more than one or two scores, meaning more than 10 points, I would hope. And that's what it's going to take to win. I don't think you can score 10 points against Green Bay and win like you can against New England or even Washington. So I just, boy, if you do win against Green Bay in prime time, hot tamales. That's going to be intriguing. Very intriguing. You win against Green Bay, you have to go to New Orleans, which people are acting like the Saints are garbage. And it's like, yeah, they got down big to Detroit 21-0. But then again, like they came back and they made it a game and they only lost by a score. So I'm not necessarily like being like, oh, yeah, it's a cakewalk. We're going to go in there and pull out the victory. Easy peasy. Lemon squeezy. And then we have to go to Philadelphia to play the Eagles on Christmas. Good God. Merry ho, ho, ho. Bah humbug, dude. And then Rams and Eagles. So it'll be interesting. Like if we can pull out the victory against, if we go and win against Green Bay and New Orleans, you're sitting at 6-8 with 3 games to play and 2 of those games against the fucking Eagles. It's like literally you could have put any 3 other teams there and I think I would have been, I'd be happy about it. But I doubt that the Eagles will be sitting anyone on Christmas. So maybe you get a victory. You know, we've keep talking about, you know, if they lock up, but they just got hammered by the San Fran, the 49ers. So now it's like, you really do have to, oh boy, now I got to look into this because let's see. Eagles are 10-2, Niners are 9-3. Okay. So basically they have to keep pace. They have to keep that one game ahead of the Niners, right? So they play us twice. Who do the Niners play? Seahawks, Cardinals, Ravens, Commanders, Rams. Ooh. Seahawks, although they handled them pretty easily Thanksgiving night, and it's not in Seattle, it's in San Fran. So I think that's a win. So that's 10-3. At Arizona, dude, Arizona is like probably the toughest fucking bad team, quote unquote bad team, or team with a losing record I've ever seen in my life. I mean, stomped the Steelers. Who else did they beat this year? They've beaten the Cowboys. They've beaten a couple teams where it's like, holy shit. So, I mean, let's not act like that's an easy win. I think that the Cardinals could give them San Francisco a run for their money, possibly even upset. Odds are Niners get the dub. So we're looking at 11-3. Ravens at home, not in Baltimore. So that could be a loss. 11-4. At Washington, that's a win. 12-4. Home against the Rams, who are probably potentially fighting for a playoff spot. So it's 11-4. Am I looking at that right? 9-3. 10-3, 11-3, 11-4, 12-4, and then they could be 13-4 or 12-5. So the Eagles are at Cowboys, at Seahawks, Giants, Cardinals, Giants. Okay. And they're 10-2. So if they go to Dallas. Who's to say that Dallas, I mean, Dallas should have beat them last time. So maybe they lose that game. It's 10-3. So now they're tied with the Niners. They go to Seattle. That could be a losable game, but I'll say they'll pull it out. So they're 11-3, right? 10-3, 11-3. They lose to us 11-4, lose the Cardinals 11-5. Then they would have to. Yeah. So I think that January 7th game, it's not going to be the Niners sitting anyone. I mean, the Eagles sitting anyone, unless the Niners really shit the bed, which I don't see happening. But then again, they had their injury issues last year. And if Purdy gets hurt, that team is screwed. Because I don't think they're having a backup come in and playing like Purdy is. Purdy is playing at MVP level. So, yeah, I just. And at two losses, we'd be 7-10. And I don't think we're not making the playoffs at 7-10. Right? I mean, I guess we could check playoff status. It wouldn't hurt. No, I don't want that, dude. Here we go. All right. Right now, I can't believe I'm talking about this. We have a 1% chance of getting the 7th seed. Gotta love it. All right. the Giants' most important games. Giants, what if? Okay, here we go. Best case scenario. All right, here we go. Jesus Christ, Neil. Get a load of this. So if we lose, say we manage to beat the Packers, Saints, and Rams, we lose twice the Eagles, which is feels like that is very plausible. That's the reality of the situation. We go 7-10. We still have a less than 1% chance of making the 7th seed, so we're not completely out of it. You know, we lose 3 of the next 5, we're definitely out, right? So we lose 2 of the next 5, we're not completely out of it. There's like a very slim, the slimmest of chances that we get the 7th seed. We lose 1 of the next 5, we have a 21% chance of getting the 7th seed and a 3% chance of getting the 6th seed. We win out and we have an 84% chance of making the playoffs. 83%, 84%. But yeah, that's like, dude, if that happens, put all your money on them to win the Super Bowl. But yeah, I don't think that's going to happen. Unless they get all their, like, get it all out of their system, the injuries, you know, the mistakes, everything is just completely flushed from the system. But, yeah, 9-8, kind of a pipe dream. I think at best we'll go 7-10, and we very easily could go 4-13. We could lose the next 5 as well. You know, it's all dependent on like how the defense feels when they wake up that day, I guess. Because like against shitty offenses like the Jets, the Patriots, and the Commanders, they can show that they can dominate. It's just that Bills game that really throws me off. But again, I think that's when we had Leonard Williams. We don't have him anymore. And we're without Dexter. So, yeah. The Packers are hot. So I don't see them coming down to earth. So that's going to be tricky. So that's the Giants. On to the Mets. I'm not going to talk about the Mets very long. Okay. There's not a lot to talk about. Mets signed Luis Severino, free agent pitcher from formerly the New York Yankees. I don't hate it. I'm not in love with it. I think it's good enough. It's good enough for now. Like, I don't think that's all you need to do, and I don't think that's all they're going to do. But it certainly would be. It certainly is not. I don't think he's going to put up the kind of performances. I mean, you know, and we say it's stupid of me to sit here and give a take like he's not going to pitch like David Peterson or Tyler McGill did in the first half of the season. He's not going to do that because he sure as shit could do that. So all I'll say is like odds are probability likewise, you know, maybe. Like we had all the bad things happen to us last year because we had all the good things happen to us the year before. So maybe it's like now we're even and now we can be a little more consistent in how things play out. So, you know, I don't see him as a, I guess he's a 3 or 4, maybe, right? Ultimately a 4 or 5. And if that's the case, that's hopefully he's the 4 or 5 and we can pick up, you know, Yamamoto and Yoshi and one more. And then we picked up, we also signed Joey Wendell. I honestly don't know, dude. I don't know. He's an infielder. Second baseman, third baseman, shortstop. Originally drafted by the Indians in the sixth round of the 2012 amateur draft. Westchester University, Westchester, PA, home of one Bam Margera, I believe. And I mean, I don't know. He's projected to have 6 home runs and 37 RBIs next year. He's 34. So I don't know that we need to say much more than that, other than he's a depth piece, I guess. He'll a vet who could help the youngins. You know, that was the other big news item was management feels pretty good about their prospects at third. You know, they think one of the three, Beatty, Mauricio, or Vientos is going to emerge as the starting third baseman. So I'm not worried at all there, but again, it could be a smokescreen. They could be saying that publicly and then dangling them as trade bait over the course of the winter. Jared Kelenic, former Met, traded to the Mariners for Cano and Diaz, now traded to the Braves, of course. So we can expect him to just kill us for the next 2 decades. Sweet. And then Shohei Ohtani is rumored to go to the Blue Jays. So, yeah, of course. Everyone saw that coming. He wants to stay on the West Coast, right? Toronto. That's like, what? Not only are you not on the West Coast, you're now in the Great North, the Great White North. But I don't know. So, you know, nothing too splashy as of yet. I think, like I said, I think the Severino signing, it's a nice addition. Can he stay healthy? That'd be sweet, you know? But yeah, you need like one or two more arms. Because I don't think you, I mean, as good as McGill and Peterson pitched down the stretch, I don't know that you feel comfortable enough saying, okay, you guys, after not being in the rotation last year, or being forced into the rotation, are going to be our guy at number 5. So kind of a slowish winter so far. Usually I feel like it picks up this week, though. Like, wasn't this week when we traded for Lindor? It's usually this week, like when we signed Marte and Escobar and Canna. Feels like it's usually this week. So it feels like there's usually a big move right before Christmas in December. All right. That's the episode. Thanks so much for watching. Thanks so much for listening. And we'll talk to you next time when we have a review of the This Is Important live podcast recording at Parks Casino in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. No. Ben Salem, Pennsylvania. Jesus, dude. And there's probably some other shenanigans going down this weekend. It's going to be a good one. So that one should be good later.